You're listening to Airline Pilot Guy, episode number 14.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh? LA departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh? Request vector over. What?
In today's show, we're going to talk about, your feedback. And I've answered several questions regarding smoke in the cockpit and airline careers and all kinds of stuff. And we also listened to some ATC audio of a Bonanza and a Mitsubishi, two separate incidents where they encountered some pretty severe icing conditions. And we're going to talk a little bit about aircraft icing and the hazard involved with that. So stay tuned. Sit back, relax. Enjoy the show. Hello again, and welcome back to the Airline Pilot Guy. I am broadcasting this time from my hotel room in Washington, D.C. at the Renaissance Hotel on M Street, not far from the mall. And I'm not talking about the shopping mall. I'm talking about all the monuments and the Capitol building and the White House and all that jazz. Anyway, let's get right to it. Hey, I told you that I would put out another one this week. Or it was last week when I said next week. But anyway, here I am. Yeah, maybe I'm back on track to get these things out consistently. Anyway, we're going to resume our coverage of feedback. Remember that this show is at least 50% feedback from you, questions from you, comments from you, etc. So, now you'll remember a couple episodes ago on very close to September 11th, I did a September 11th episode, and I received this from a good friend of mine, Sean McCarney. You may have heard me talk about him before. He is in the UK, south of London, Farnborough. I'm sure you've heard of that airport where they host the big air show. I don't know if it's every year or every other year. And anyway, he's an air traffic controller there for the UK. And he has a great podcast, by the way. He's the host of Just a Catholic Dad. And you can find that at justacatholicdad.com. And his name, as I said, Sean McCarney. And here, let me read what he said to me. Hi, Jeff. Just thought I'd drop you a line regarding Airline Pilot Guy, Episode 12. The stories you related from people personally touched by the events on 9/11 really affected me. We in the UK obviously were shocked, upset, and affected emotionally by the events of that day. And, of course, there was a practical impact professionally on me and my colleagues. But outside of the sheer scale of events of that day, most of us here were thankfully like the audience in some surreal tragedy. To have it happen in your own country and in such a way as to affect such a large number of your own people is a different thing altogether. We never seem to get the balance right somehow in events like these. We either forget and become complacent, or in the case of 9/11, the saturating 24/7 stream of TV documentaries and dramas about every minute aspect of the events, no matter how remotely related, carries the danger of turning a very real manifestation of evil into some sort of grand soap opera, where the reality of what happened becomes blurred into some sort of pseudo-fiction. Where your podcast succeeded so beautifully was that you related real, I hate that word, stories about real, people, in an understated, simple, and human way, which let their tales be told without trivia, hyperbole, and artificial drama. There can be no better way to remember them. Great podcast. Catch up soon. God bless, Sean. Thanks, Sean. And again, that compliment is really means a lot to me because Sean does a fantastic job with his podcast. You should check it out. He talks about, among many things, being an air traffic controller and some of the things that he encounters in his job. But he also talks about his primary role of being a father and a husband and raising his child as a Catholic. So check it out. Just a Catholic Dad. Thanks, Sean, for your feedback. Okay, then I also received some feedback from Lyle Whitsett, or Whitesett. Hi, Captain Jeff. Just watched an episode of Air Disasters, Fanning the Flames, where a 747 crashed as a result, among other problems, of smoke in the cockpit. Not sure if this has been addressed previously, but couldn't some sort of exhaust fan be installed in the cockpit? I know there are gas masks available, but a fan could clear up things a little just to maintain visibility. Maybe a bleed valve of some sort. Keep up the good work. This is my new favorite podcast. Thanks. And that's from Lyle in Dallas, Texas. Thanks, Lyle. And I've always wondered that myself. Now, they tell us when we go through our smoke elimination procedures that the last resort for us is to open up a cockpit window. You know, I would think that, first of all, did you know that we could actually do that? You know, below a certain speed, and if the airplane is depressurized or unpressurized, we can actually open up our cockpit windows. Now, I've never done it myself, but I've heard from other instances where people have done this that it's quite noisy when you do that. There is some airstream, slipstream around the nose of the aircraft and around the window, so it's not like you're having air rush in at 400 miles per hour, but, just think about it. Obviously, it creates a vacuum, probably a lot of noise and a lot of air movement in the cockpit, but I would think that that would help dissipate smoke. As far as a fan, I don't know if they've looked at that or not, some kind of a bleed air system. I don't know if we have enough smoke in the cockpit related events for them to put something like that in. Maybe they think it's just too much of a design cost, based on, you know, the relative risk, and because safety is basically a scale of, you know, risk versus benefit. I mean, honestly, if you wanted to be completely safe, we wouldn't get in our cars because, you know, there's a chance we could crash. We wouldn't get in airplanes because there's always a chance that they could crash. So, obviously, we all, on a day-to-day basis, take on certain risks because the benefit outweighs the risk. And in this case, maybe the engineers and the people in charge of writing the checks have decided that it's just not worth having a system like this based on the number of incidents involving smoke. So, but I agree with you. I would really love to have some kind of a thing like that because, you know, there are several accidents in aviation history that occurred because the air crew was incapacitated, including a good friend of mine. Well, not a good friend, an acquaintance of mine. We flew C-141s together. We were at Altus Air Force Base for our C-141 training, and he was on a trip, a mission in southern Italy, and they took off from the airport, and they lost, I think they actually lost both engines on the same side of the airplane. It had, the C-141 Starlifter has four engines, and I don't remember if it was the port or starboard side of the airplane, but regardless, they had their hands full. I guess a turbine let loose, and there was a lot of smoke. I think there was some kind of a fire involved, and apparently whatever was burning created cyanide gas, and the crew was incapacitated, and the airplane crashed. So yeah, a lot of accidents that could probably benefit from some kind of a system where smoke could somehow be evacuated or eliminated from the cockpit area so we could see. Now, all the airplanes that we have at Acme have, you know, we have oxygen masks so that we can continue to breathe and not get choked up on smoke. And we have smoke goggles that we can put on as well. But I've heard that when it really gets smoky in the cockpit, with those smoke goggles on and the oxygen masks on, it's very, very difficult to see anything. So, good question. Maybe some of you out there who are engineers or know a little bit more about this kind of thing can send me some feedback and let me know what you think of Lyle's suggestion that a fan or some kind of a bleed system be used to eliminate smoke in the cockpit. Oh, yeah, and also, if you are a jet transport pilot and you've actually experienced an open cockpit window, let me know how that worked out. I'd be interested to know how noisy and how bad that is. Okay, let's see. Let's move on to some more feedback. This is from Cy Kovac. Jeff, just a very quick note to say thank you for your podcast. I'm really enjoying it so far. It's very educational, too. I'm a 3,000-hour military helicopter pilot just considering moving across to an airline career, so any info on the current job market and lifestyle is appreciated. Many thanks, and keep up the good work. And that's from Cy. And he sent it from his iPhone. Thank you, Cy. And for those of you listening who have iPhones and Android phones and any kind of a smartphone, just use that to send me some feedback, whether it be text or email or audio. And yeah, I try to kind of keep up with what's happening in the hiring world. And again, I'm not into it completely because, I have a job and, you know, I don't want to sound selfish, but I've been out of the looking at airlines and figuring out what it takes to get hired by one for about 24 years now. So, 23, 24 years. So I should probably pay closer attention to that. I do know that there are some airlines I've heard anyway that are actually hiring, bringing back all their furloughed people. Of course, we've talked about in the past the pilot shortage. And so it looks like it might be a good time if you're considering a career in the airlines to get on board. And I'm also hearing some good rumors also that maybe finally we might actually start regaining some of the things that we lost, pay and benefits, over the last decade or so. So probably won't get it all back, but just to get any significant portion of it back would be great. Because after all, this is a profession, as well as an avocation for many of us, and it's skilled labor. You know, not everybody can fly complicated, high-performance airplanes. We're a limited quantity out there, so we should be compensated appropriately. That's my opinion, anyway. Okay, let's see some more feedback. This is from Eric Horde. And he writes, "Dear Captain Jeff, just wanted to thank you for your podcast. I listened to you while I cut the grass, and you've turned 2 hours that I despised into a time that flies by now for me. I especially enjoy the broad range of topics that you cover, as I'm a pilot wannabe with about 1,000 hours on my Dell PC in Microsoft Flight Sim and 42 actual hours in a Cessna 172 15 years ago out of Boeing Field in Seattle. I especially love when you play the actual tapes of ATC pilot interaction from incidents that have recently happened and give us your commentary. I'm a bit behind as I was late finding your podcast, but listened yesterday to the Egypt Air 777 incursion at JFK and its near miss with the Lufthansa Airbus 340 and had goosebumps. I've flown Egypt Air and was scared by what I heard, to say the least. I love your balanced approach to topics. I love that you have an opinion and are not afraid to share it. And really love that you cover a whole bunch of stuff, all of which is very interesting to me. As a side note, I really doubt that I would ever have downloaded a podcast called Catholic Pilot. I mean no disrespect that by that, and only mention it as I can tell that it was hard for you to change the name, but I think that you're probably attracting a much broader audience, which I think was your goal. And this is me speaking. Yes, that was my goal, and I'm glad I made the name change. And yes, it was hard. And if you've listened to my recent podcast, you know that I've kind of come up with a solution for that. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, I have two streams now. One that includes the individual Catholic Pilot podcast, which is just a personal commentary about my family life and faith and other things happening in my life. And this one, which deals with feedback like your feedback here and other things like you mentioned here in your feedback, looking at incidents, accidents, recordings and stuff. And by the way, I do have some of that for this podcast, so I need to move on so we can get to that. Let's see. He continues. I do also have a couple of questions for you if you haven't already answered them. You fly the MD-8890 series, which I know is getting a bit long in the tooth. So am I. So I'm curious what you think your next ride will be and what you would choose to fly in the Acme fleet if you could pick and why. Okay, let me answer these one by one. What I think I really like to do is move to the 757, 767 series of airplanes that we have quite a number of those, a broad base of trips as far as domestic and international. As I said, a big category, which means that I'd have a lot of diversity and choice. Problem is, I'm just not. I mean, I could fly it right now, but I'd be very junior. I'd be in the bottom 25 percentile of the seniority list on that particular airplane and category. And I'd be flying weekends, and I'd be flying holidays, and I'd be flying in the middle of the night, and I don't want to do that. I've tasted seniority, and I like it. So, and honestly, since deregulation, I'm not deregulation, since bankruptcy and all the problems we had in the late 90s and early 2000s, of which we're still recovering, the pay scales at Acme and all the other majors, and well, probably all the airlines, were cut dramatically. And the difference in the pay rate between the airplane that I'm flying now and the 757, 767 series of airplanes is not really that huge. And to me, it's not worth the pay raise is not worth the cut in lifestyle and control over my schedule. So that would be my answer. Now I'm kind of curious about the we now have with our merger with Acme North a fleet of Airbus airplanes, Airbus 319, 320s, narrow bodies, and also some Airbus 330s are wide bodies. And I don't know, I've been thinking it might be kind of cool sometime to fly that Airbus 320 side stick controller and just kind of learn more about the whole philosophy behind Airbus's automation and such. It would be a little bit of a pay raise. I'm not sure. Kind of waiting for things to shake out a little bit to see what the trips are going to really turn out to look like. And yeah, we'll see. But for now, I'm on this thing until things start improving, which is the 88 MD-8890 series. Okay. He asks another question. I'm curious if there is an honor code among professional pilots that would prevent you or most pilots from reporting someone whose skills you felt were severely diminished or even unsafe. I know that in many industries you just don't rat out another colleague, and I'm curious how rampant that mindset is among the major airlines. Well, good news. We do have something in place at Acme, and I'm sure in all the other major airlines. The union, the Airline Pilots Association, our local chapter, has something, a division or a department or whatever you want to call it, called professional standards. And basically, it's a way of policing ourselves. And you're flying with somebody who you think might have weak flying skills or maybe even somebody that's just a jerk, can't get along with anybody. Many different reasons to use professional standards. But you give them a call or send them an email and you express your concern about, and it's, all, it's not something that's reported to the company. And I don't know if it's, I think you could probably do this anonymously, but it really doesn't matter because you're not exposing yourself at all. So I think that they keep track of people that people have had concerns about, and they actually directly talk to them. They call them up and say, hey, look, we've had several calls or several emails about you in regard to this. And so it's kind of a way to kind of control things and quality control and to kind of nip things in the bud. There are probably people out there that, especially if they're just not fun to fly with, or, well, not fun to fly with, but if they're just plain jerks or they're the way they run a cockpit or whatever, and they intimidate and are just a pain in the you-know-what for a lot of people. And I think that, in some cases, they don't realize how they're coming across to people. And I think that professional standards, if they contact this type of person, Perhaps they can reflect upon what is being said by many people, and perhaps change their ways. Now, of course, we know people that no matter how many times and how many people step up to the plate and say, look, you need to change your attitude or behavior or whatever it is, and they just don't get it, or they don't care and they refuse to change it. And that if that's the case, then that usually is advanced to the next level, you know, probably something to do with the company involved. But I've actually received phone calls in the past regarding certain, when I was a co-pilot, I remember, I think on two separate occasions, having to ask or answer some questions by professional standards because they were concerned about a captain that I was flying with. And I gave them my honest opinion about them. In fact, I think this one that I'm thinking of in particular did have something to do with his flying skills. And I honestly said, you know, the way he flies the airplane is not, you know, the best and smoothest, but I honestly couldn't say that the person was unsafe. But I said he definitely could improve as far as, you know, the way he flies the airplane. But nice guy, just wasn't the smooth operator that many of us try to be. Anyway, so that went on for further than I wanted it to go, so sorry about that. But yes, we do have some stuff in place for people who have concerns about other people. And trust me, if somebody out there is really unsafe, there is paperwork and there are, you know, records of incidents you know, piling up in various offices in the company. And then if it's a big enough concern, they'll do something about it. And his final question, Eric. Finally, I'm going back to the Egypt Air incident. Are there airlines, foreign or domestic, that are known in the industry as being less safe than others? I know, for instance, that 10 or 20 years ago, Korean Air was one of those and undertook major efforts to fix a broken culture that prevent junior officers from questioning blatantly unsafe practices in the cockpit. I realize that you may be hesitant to name specific airlines, so even a broad answer would be interesting to hear. Well, I don't know if there's actually a list. I think in general, you know, airlines from the more, you know, quote, first world countries, they're the ones that are going to have the better safety records because they have better procedures and in place, structures in place to ensure good training and quality assurance. Some of the airlines around the world that seem to have the highest rates of accidents and incidents are ones from some of the second and third world, you know, where again, the training is not as good, the quality control is not as good. Let's say, I'm just throwing these things out here, like Indonesia, Africa, India, some of those types of countries. That's not to say that there aren't excellent pilots, very safe pilots in all those countries. Yes, there are. But again, there are a higher percentage of weaker, less qualified people in some of these countries as well. And let's see, what was your other question here? Oh, yeah, you mentioned Korean Air. We at Acme had a code share agreement, an affiliation with them many, many years back. And we started getting concerned, or our company started getting concerned, by the high rates of incidents and accidents, and kind of did an internal investigation of their whole flight training program and everything else, and basically stopped the code share with them and the affiliation with them, but sent our own people over to South Korea to help them change their program, their training program and quality assurance program to, you know, be raised to a world standard. And, you know, it took time. As you mentioned, the culture in a lot of these Asian countries and maybe a lot of the other world airlines is such that, you know, there's not a lot of what we call cockpit resource management going on. You know, the captain is king, and whatever I say is the way it's going to go down, and I'm not going to hear anything from anybody else. Now, you know, some people would argue who flew three, four decades ago or more that it was that way here in the United States, and I think that they'd be right. But in today's world, the environment and culture in the cockpit is much, much different. There's a lot more communication now. There's a lot more respect for each other and each other's position, and it's a safer world because of it. So, yeah, hopefully that's a broad enough answer for you. I hope that you'll keep doing the podcast for a long time. Thanks very much for it, as I'm sure it's a lot of work, and best of luck in your career. Well, thank you, Eric. And yeah, it is a lot of work, but you know what? It's worth it, because I know that I'm putting something out there that helps certain people. It's entertaining for other people. It's good for me too. It forces me to keep my finger on the pulse of what's happening in the airline industry, especially in regard to safety. So I think that it's improving me as well as far as my job, my career. So thanks again for your feedback. Continue to send it to me. Okay, let's see. Da-da-da-da. Oh, perhaps you saw this. A little bit of lighter information or news. Monroe Regional Airport in Louisiana. This was a couple weeks ago, I think. Learned Tuesday that passenger loading and unloading bridges at the new $36 million terminal are not able to connect to airplanes. Airport Director Cleve Norell confirmed Tuesday afternoon that some of the loading and unloading bridges at the new terminal appear they will not be able to connect to some of the airplanes. He said airport officials are working to determine what caused the problem, if the issue resulted from a design flaw during the construction process, or if it was a result of an error on the city's part. We're checking them out to see what the problem is, but it looks like some of the jetways will not fit, and some will. We're not sure what will fix it right now, but that's what we're working on. So apparently these loading bridges, the jetways, based on where the airplanes are having to park, they're not long enough to reach the airplane. So not a good result from the $36 million investment in this new terminal. So I don't know if they've figured out a solution to this problem yet or not, but I thought that was kind of funny. Oops. All right. This from Brian. Good morning, Captain Jeff. Greetings from Ohio. I just found your podcast about a month ago and really enjoying listening to it, and I'm impressed you get such good acoustics recording in a hotel room. Thanks. By the way, this hotel room, for some reason, has a lot of solid surfaces, and I'm sitting over here on the other side of the bed. I've tried to find a good place in the room here that didn't have a lot of the echo sounds that I was getting from my other position at the desk. But yeah, I use a dynamic mic, and that seems to cut down on the extraneous noises somewhat. Not completely, but I'm doing the best I can. But thank you for the compliment. Anyway, this letter is probably more geared towards your Catholic pilot side, but thought you might enjoy this story. I've been a pilot for about 10 years. I attended a major college 141 program just out of the military. Had these big dreams about flying for a major airline one day. It turns out it was not to be at that time. I just completed my instrument rating in the summer right before 9/11, and I don't need to go into the ramifications that horrible incident had on the industry. So I did not get to complete my formal flight training, but did finish college and went off looking for another career. I'm a man of faith and believe everything happens for a reason. I had a strong Catholic upbringing, Catholic education, married Catholic, and I am even married to a Catholic elementary school teacher and have three children. I continued to fly at my local FBO by myself and giving family member rides just to keep getting up in the air and logging hours. Fast forward 8 years later, my wife and I buy our first house to raise our children in. As it turns out, my new neighbor is an airline pilot flying those jets with purple tails. And yeah, we can say who that is. I'm sure he means FedEx. We became great friends, and over another couple years had coached me on what I needed to do and even made a phone call to assist me getting an interview for a time-building job where he flew at years ago and happened to be 5 minutes down the road. I could not have prayed for the events that has transpired over the last 18 months. I now find myself in a position that 10 years ago I would have thought was not possible. Commercial, single-engine land, multi-engine land with instrument rating, first-class medical, just under 500 hours total time with 80 multi-engine and 70 of that is turbine. Awesome. Good job, man. As I said, I believe in things. I believe things happen for a reason, and I refuse to believe that all that has happened was just luck. It was just too perfect. I'm not sure that story is airworthy, but if you have any other aspiring pilots out there that have had roadblocks stopping them from chasing the dream, tell them not to give up hope. So, yes, thank you. That is inspiring. It looks like you're on track to get into this aviation airline career world, and I hope you continue to rack up the hours and get experience, and one of these days you're out there flying with us up in the airwaves, whatever you want to call them. Let's see. My second comment is concerning the so-called pilot shortage. I've been reading the gouges and all kinds of articles regarding this issue and have a small amount of info regarding it. A pilot shortage in the majors, as you have said, probably will never happen. However, I'm finding the regional airlines are already seeing a shortcoming of applications. My friend was eating breakfast at a local restaurant and had an aviation t-shirt on and was approached by a human resources manager for a regional airline asking if he was a pilot. He is a commercial pilot, but not fixed wing. The human resources manager commented that they can't get anybody right now and to tell any of his pilot friends to apply. I have another friend that was jump seating on a regional and speaking with the pilots, killing time. They indicated that they are hiring also, and it's getting to the point that human resources will hire 6 or 7 people and only 2 will show up for a class. Wow. Not very motivated. This is great news for us with low time that are getting ready to make the next step to Part 121 flying. Have you heard of any similar stories concerning the current hiring going on? No, I haven't, but I'm sure that many listening have heard of stories like these. And that's good news. That means that these guys are probably getting on with the majors and producing vacancies in the regionals, which are kind of a natural stepping point to get on with the major airlines. And hey, maybe they could start paying the pilots flying for the regionals more money. Maybe that will attract more people, and instead of getting 6 or 7 to apply and only 2 showing up, maybe they'll all show up, knock the door down. You never know. Anyway, also I do have one more takeoff than landing. My advice is that you should at least try it once. Take care, Brian. I don't know, Brian. I think I'm too old for that, but you never know. Never say no, right? So apparently Brian has leapt out of an airplane, hopefully with a parachute. Obviously he did, because he's still alive to send me email. So again, thanks for your feedback, Brian. Let's play some... Oh, I have one more piece of feedback before I play the recording that I have. Let me get over here to my sound application. And this is from Mickey.
Hey, Captain Jeff. My name is Mickey, and I'm calling from Arizona. I've been a pilot for 5 years, and I'm a Marine vet. Just trying to finish up my flight training, and then someday do some sort of flying, whether it be corporate or just general aviation or commercial, whatever. But just wanted to give you compliments on the show. It's provided me a lot of motivation, and really enjoy it. Just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate and enjoy listening to the ATC recordings that you have of various emergencies and stuff, and it gives people an idea of the amount of work and just a newfound respect for what most people don't ever hear or see. And just have some questions to see if you ever come through Phoenix or if you ever do any West Coast stuff. I think with your acne status, you're mainly on the East Coast with being domiciled in Atlanta, but I'm just curious to see how often you come out West. And if you think that maybe Acme will be getting some of those 717s that AirTran might be getting rid of as the Southwest merger continues. I've seen some speculation on various forums and just wanted to get maybe your thoughts on another fleet or a future fleet type joining your airline. Thank you for everything you've done, and God bless. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mickey, for your feedback. He used the feedback line, which is 304-99-PILOT, 304-997-4568. And, yeah, ACME gets out west quite a bit, actually. It depends on the airplane you fly. The category of airplane I fly, MD-88, MD-90s, we're starting to get out west a little bit more, Atlanta-based guys anyway, because we're... or the company is using the MD-90s for the some of the longer hauls. And so, yeah, I've seen some Northern California and other Western destinations recently, so I hope that that will continue to improve for us, because long ago when I was on the 727, I mean, we'd fly trips all the time out of Atlanta heading out to the West, and I really enjoy flying out in the West. Nice flying out there. But if you're on another type of airplane, like the 737s, the 757s, 767s, etc., a lot of, you know, back and forth between Atlanta, West Coast, cross country, you know, New York to West Coast, that kind of thing. So, yeah, we're out there. In fact, I used to go to Phoenix quite a bit, Tucson, etc. Maybe it's just the type of trips I'm flying. I like, you know, minimum... you know, shorter legs and as few legs as possible during the daytime. So I think, you know, maybe there are trips that I could be flying doing that kind of thing, but they're not meeting my personal requirements, my filters. But regarding the rumor about the 717s that AirTran, well, you know, now Southwest in the AirTran purchase / merger, talking about possibly getting rid of those things. And I had heard the rumor from several different places that perhaps ACME was looking at purchasing those. I don't know if those are good rumors or bad rumors or what, but I think that that would be a nice addition for our fleet, but we'll have to just wait and see. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it. Thanks again, Mickey, for your voice feedback. Now, let's listen to this. How do I set this up? This is the time of year where we have to start thinking about all of us. It's more something that general aviation and business aviation folks, especially if you're flying the turboprops, have to think about more so than those of us flying the transport category aircraft. And it's icing. And, you know, icing actually can occur any time of year, but of course it occurs more often this time of year we're in, into the wintertime and the early spring. And that's because the freezing levels start lowering and you're getting the type of precipitation that is ideal for creating icing conditions. And so that's something that we have to think about. But again, it's especially important for people out there who are flying general aviation, as in this instance of a guy flying a Bonanza in the Los Angeles basin. This is a conversation between a Bonanza and a SoCal approach.
Bonanza 233 Romeo 9000.
233 Romeo SoCal approach. Good afternoon. Altimeter 2987.
9087 on the altimeter. 233 Romeo.
233 Romeo, stay in flight conditions.
IMC 233 Romeo.
Okay, you know, you hear him, he's kind of, just pay attention to his tone of voice. He's very relaxed, he's very professional sounding, kind of casual. He's flying along, having this contact with the SoCal approach.
12 o'clock, 2 miles, 7 miles in diameter, light and intense.
Okay, 233 Romeo, and how long till we can get higher?
Another 2 miles.
233 Romeo. And approachment is 233 Romeo picking up trace ice.
233 Romeo, roger. Climb and maintain 1-1000.
Okay, he's starting to pick up some trace icing. And his, I don't know if you noticed it, but his tone of voice changed a little bit. It's a little bit more serious now, not quite so laid back and casual.
1-1000-233-ROMEO.
233-ROMEO, if you like a vector out of the weather that I've depicted on the radar and issued to you, you can turn right to heading 050.
Okay, over to 050-233-ROMEO.
233-ROMEO, turn left heading 010.
Over to 010-233-ROMEO. We're picking up a decent amount of ice here. I'd like to maybe just lower if we can.
Okay, a little bit more stress in his voice I'm detecting. Picking up a decent amount of ice. Kind of still sounding like he wants to sound professional and casual. And yeah, we may want to get a lower altitude here and get away from this stuff.
All right, I can go lower and take it down to 8,000 feet, November 330, and then you're going to get climbed up by Joshua.
Let's take me lower, get me out of this ice, and then we'll figure it out the rest of the ice. Right,
November 330, just trying to maintain 8,000.
8,000-233-ROMEO.
Romeo, fly heading 350. Romeo, fly heading 340.
Okay, 340-233-ROMEO.
Nah, what kind of icing are you getting now?
Icing, I need to get down lower quicker.
Okay. Now he's really getting serious. You can kind of sense the concern in his voice. Yeah, I need to get down lower and quicker. Need to get out of this ice.
8,000 is the best we can do for you there. You're in minimum vectoring altitudes. I can turn you in reverse course, and we can land someplace within the basin, or you have to keep northbound.
You turn me, 233-ROMEO.
Okay. Obviously, he's in the area of the mountains that surrounds the Los Angeles basin, and he can't really get much lower. Air traffic control can't give him a lower altitude than 8,000 feet. That's the minimum vectoring altitude, which gives you 2,000 feet of terrain clearance in that area. Anything lower, and then you could be getting too close to the terrain.
Romeo, turn left turn heading 160.
Turn 160,
33 Romeo. I'm going to have to hold you at 8,000 for now. I can't descend you for another 5 miles.
Okay, hold me 8,000, 233 Romeo.
Number 33 Romeo, watch your altitude. I'm showing you at 75.
33 Romeo, climb to 8,000. 233 Romeo holding this altitude, 7,800. And 233 Romeo, we're picking up more ice here. We need to get down or get turned.
33 Romeo, roger. I declare you as an emergency at this time. Descend up, maintain at or above 6,500.
Down to 6,500, 233.
Okay. Obviously, with the amount of ice that is on his wings and perhaps prop, he's having trouble maintaining 8,000 feet. He descended to 7,500 feet and eventually crept it back up to 7,800 feet. And now, of course, this latter part, he's in an area where the terrain is a little bit lower, so air traffic control now can descend him to 6,500 feet.
Number 33 Romeo, if able, turn left to heading a 130 vector, sir, precipitation.
30-233 Romeo.
33 Romeo, are you still encountering ice?
33 Romeo, yes, we are.
233 Romeo, maintain VFR at or above 4,500.
Down to 4,500, 233 Romeo. Foster airspeed indicator.
33 Romeo, roger.
Okay. Now he just threw in there, he lost his airspeed indicator. Now, as we know from, my talk and analysis of Air France 447, that is what happened to precipitate that disaster, was the loss of airspeed. The pitot tubes, little protrusions that stick out, usually on the nose of the aircraft, sometimes on the wing of the aircraft, depending on the type of airplane, that measures the pressure of the air in the wind stream. And we use that pressure to indicate how fast we're going, and we also use that pressure input to determine our altitude as well, compared with our static pressure. Actually, the static pressure is what determines the altitude, but we use both pitot air and static air to come up with these indications of airspeed, altitude, rate of descent, etc. So he's lost his airspeed indicator because his pitot tube has iced up.
Continue descent at or above 3,000.
Above 3,000, 233 Romeo.
San Bernardino Airport. Look out your left at about 11 o'clock, 4.5 miles.
Okay, 233 Romeo is breaking out of the bottom. Like, we're good on the airspeed now. 233 Romeo, airspeed indicator's alive.
Number 33 Romeo, roger. The airport at 11 o'clock, 4.5 miles.
233 Romeo has the airport. Can we get vectors back to Hawthorne? 233.
Okay. So now he's finally out of the icing conditions. He's below the clouds. He has contact with the ground. He sees an airport close by. And now all of a sudden he asks if he can return to Hawthorne, which is an airport which is very close to Los Angeles International over there near the shore. He's still, you know, several miles inland right now, and he wants to, he's feeling a lot better about everything right now. The ice is gone. He wants to not land as soon as conditions permit. He wants to continue flight and try to make it back to his home field, I'm guessing.
Romeo?
Number 233 Romeo, you certainly may. November 33 Romeo, turn to the right, heading 230, and are you able to hold 5,000?
Yeah, 233 Romeo, looks like about, I think I can hold 5,000 right under the cloud.
33 Romeo, I'll just tell you what, go ahead and descend and maintain 4,000 at this time, heading 233 Romeo. Heading 230, 4,000, 33 Romeo. 4,000, November 33 Romeo.
230, 4,000, 233 Romeo.
And how's your icing right now?
We're out of the clouds, 233 Romeo.
November 33 Romeo, roger. Advise ready to copy your IFR clearance to Hawthorne.
One sec, let me get on this heading, and we'll advise when ready to copy. I just don't have any airspeed indicator, that's all.
Okay, what? He said he had his airspeed back, and he was out of the icing, and he thought he could stay below the clouds, but apparently he must be in and out or in them because he's lost his airspeed indicator again, or at least something, maybe some residual icing or ice crystals have dislodged and blocked up his pitot tube again. So now he's flying out there without an airspeed indicator again.
You still don't have your airspeed indicator?
No airspeed indicator and no vertical speed indicator either. Looks like we got some pitot tube plugged up.
Got your pitot heat on?
Pitot heat's on.
Very good. About 190 knots is what I'm showing for your airspeed. Descending.
Okay. He's kind of giving him an indication of his speed, which is good because he doesn't have an airspeed indicator. They're kind of covering up each other, talking over each other a little bit. But from what I got from that is that he's saying he's concerned that he's descending and he shouldn't be.
Wings up, 33 Romeo, hold level flight on heading 230. Wings level. Wings level. Hold your heading.
233 Romeo.
Okay, obviously this air traffic controller is a pilot, because he immediately said, is your pitot heat on, when he talked about losing his airspeed indicator, which is what you want to ensure. There's a little heating element in the pitot tube that should prevent ice from forming. And, of course, it didn't work if you're in, you know, pretty good icing or severe icing. Even the heat, the pitot heater can't keep the ice from forming on this type of airplane. And so that was my first indication that this guy is probably a private pilot himself, the air traffic controller. And then when he sees that the guy is losing speed and he's also descending, he's concerned now that this guy's losing control of the airplane. So he's telling him, wings level, wings level. And so let's continue.
Number 33 Roman, I take you into Ontario Airport. We'll put it down and we'll get things squared away. That's the better course of action. The airport at actually 12 o'clock and 7 miles. Report Ontario in sight. 33 Romeo, the airport at 12 o'clock and 7 miles.
233 Romeo is looking. Still a little bit IMC here, 233 Romeo.
November 33 Romeo, descend and maintain 3,200.
3,200, 233 Romeo.
November 33 Romeo, I show you at about 120 knots right now, about 110.
Okay, speed, remember earlier was at 190, now he's at 120, 110. His speed is continuing to bleed off, and I can tell now the air traffic controller, his tone of voice, he's pretty concerned now that this guy is going to lose it.
Oh, we're indicated 136 ground speed, 145 indicated, so can go VFR over to Hawthorne, but I'd prefer to stick with you guys.
Okay, now he's kind of second-guessing himself, I think, the pilot, find the Bonanza. I could make it to Hawthorne, but no, it's probably a better idea for me to put it down in Ontario.
Okay, you want want to try to go to Hawthorne? You don't want to land and get everything situated?
All right, well, look, we'll go ahead into Ontario. I've got the airport in sight, 233 Romeo, and just check the pitot tube because the airspeed indicator is a little bit freaking out on me here.
That's probably the best course of action, November 33 Romeo. You're cleared visual approach to runway 26 left at Ontario. Into 33 Romeo, contact Ontario Tower on 120.6, 120.6.
26, 233 Romeo.
Okay. So the story ends. It's a happy ending. Lands at Ontario and checks out all his systems, and et cetera, and probably empties out his trousers. Because he should have learned a lesson there. You don't fly into, you know, of course, you know, I have to give him a break. Maybe there, the conditions for icing weren't forecast, and he unintentionally got himself into that situation. But you could hear the... he was kind of waffling as far as what he should do. And luckily, this air traffic controller had a strong enough personality to say, look, you know, you need to, I think it's the best course of action for you to land now. Land as soon as conditions permit. This was an emergency situation. You almost crashed the darn airplane. Why don't you get on the ground and we can check all the systems out. Think about this a little bit before you head over to Hawthorne. Maybe allow the weather to improve. That's one of those things, in, especially in general aviation, a lot of accidents occur because people feel pressured to do something. They set out to do a goal, and they're not going to let anything stop it, even if you know, if it goes against common sense. They sometimes think that their skills are greater than they assess their skills greater than maybe what they are in reality. They think that they have better instrument flying skills than they really do, because they have a little bit of hood time and not real instrument time. And you know, you just see one after another of accidents occurring from people who are more confident than they probably should be as far as their skills or their training is concerned. Anyway, in this condition or this situation, luckily the air traffic controller was persuasive and got the guy to land his Bonanza B-35, and it had a happy ending. So you're asking about icing, aren't you? Well, you know, many of you out there are pilots, and you know quite a bit about that. It's quite a danger, as I mentioned before, especially this time of year. It's the icing conditions are those atmospheric conditions that can lead to the formation of water ice on the surfaces of aircraft or within the engine as carburetor icing. Inlet icing is another engine-related danger often occurring in jet aircraft. So the airplane that I fly, we have engine anti-ice systems, so that anytime we're in a situation where we think we might encounter icing in the engine inlets, or we're actually getting icing conditions, we turn the switches on to allow bleed air. I guess some airplanes have electric elements, but most of the airplanes that I've flown use bleed air tapped off the engine. So it's very, very hot, highly pressurized air that goes through these surfaces to prevent ice, either to melt ice or keep it from forming to begin with. And so that's inlet icing. And many types of anti-icing systems are available depending on the airplane. The transport category aircraft, the jets, have they use bleed air almost exclusively to prevent icing or ice from forming on critical control surfaces. Some of the turboprop transport category, or they're all in the same transport category, but the turboprops, like the big ones, like the Havilands and the well, you know what I'm talking about, the big turboprops, have de-icing boots, which are rubberized devices that are on the leading edge of the wings and tail, and once ice forms to a certain point, they hit the switch to inflate these boots, and the boots actually, you know, inflate and crack the ice that's formed and the ice is shed from those critical surfaces. Now, I've never flown an airplane that has those ice boots installed, so I'm not sure exactly how they work, but they apparently work pretty well if used properly and at the right time. Let's see. So icing is a hazard because when ice forms on a wing surface, it changes the shape of the wing. And we all know that the shape of the wing is what makes it fly. It creates lift. And when you change the shape of a wing, you start altering the lift capacity of the wing. And of course, if you start decreasing the lift capacity of a wing, you get into trouble. Gravity wins over lift. So you want to make sure that you're always in a situation that you are getting nice positive lift characteristics from your wing surfaces and tail surfaces so that you can continue to fly and control your airplane. And there's also something called propeller ice. And I've never flown except for, you know, my initial training in Cessnas and that kind of thing, I've never flown an airplane that has encountered propeller icing. But I would imagine you'd have to be in pretty bad conditions for that to happen. I guess also for you helicopter pilots out there, you have to worry about rotor icing. And so I have a link I'll put in the show notes to a Wikipedia article regarding icing conditions. And I had one more thing, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to play the whole thing because I'm already going pretty long here, almost an hour. But it was something that I saw reported in FlightAware, which is a site that I go to get a lot of my aviation news information. And I thought it was something recent, but it actually occurred, I think, in the early spring, not this year, but a year ago. So I think it was like March or May of 2010. But it's the kind of thing where you listen to it. It was on YouTube, by the way, but I just have the audio here. The kind of thing that you hear these guys in a pretty serious situation, and you really get, you know, caught up in what's happening to them. And I'll just play a little bit of it just to kind of give you a little teaser, and then I'll have links to the actual YouTube files or YouTube URL where you can actually listen to them, the full thing. They're two parts, and you'll see that this is quite a serious situation that these two found themselves in. So let's just start by listening to the first part.
Vancouver, Romeo, Oscar Mike.
Oscar Mike, Vancouver.
Roger, Romeo, Oscar Mike, requesting return to camera.
Oscar Mike, Roger, and you have some difficulties now, sir?
Yeah, right now we got a bit of a problem. We got pretty heavy ice, pretty heavy heading right now.
Okay, Oscar Mike, Roger, what's your heading right now?
We're just turning around to a heading of about 210.
Oscar Mike, Roger, clear present position, direct Kamloops. As soon as you roll out of it, I'll give you a heading.
Okay, Oscar Mike.
Oscar Mike, you can have whatever altitude you'd like.
Okay, Oscar Mike.
Yeah, I told him to turn around. He's doing generally what.
Okay, is that what the show is nearest airport for us right now?
The nearest airport right now would be either Kamloops or Kelowna. I'll just check it right here on the scale for you.
Yeah, check the weather too.
Can you get the Kamloops and Kelowna weather for me real quick? We'll see which one's better.
Foster, we got an emergency here.
Okay, Kelowna is closer by about 10 miles. I check you're in the right turn. And I'll give you a heading for Kelowna. It looks like right now possibly about 220. It'll be better when you roll out of it. Very light rain. Thank you.
Somebody else on the call.
Super Romeo, so Mike, what's the active runway in Kelowna?
Okay, it'll be your choice. I show the wind to Kelowna 160 at 5, so I assume you can do the straight in there, 50.
Yeah, that'll be fine, straight in, thanks.
He's in Vancouver.
Yeah,
Oscar Mike won't be coming, he's going to Kelowna, he's got a problem.
Okay. How many miles down from Kelowna?
I show 5.8 miles, and are you receiving Kelowna Beacon yet, sir?
No, not yet. Then. What are you showing for ground, sir?
Show 160 knots. I've shown that for a bit since you've come out of the turn. Not consistently 160 ground speed, and right 5 degrees. Looks a little better for Kelowna now. Further right 5.
Okay, we'll take a right 5, sir. Showing for temperature in Kelowna for all.
Okay, I show temperature 6. Viewpoint 4, 2-9 or 8-8 the altimeter, and it's QFRAC 2, Strata Q 6.
Thank you.
Carl, let me know if you want lower than 13. We're just checking out the terrain in there to see what the lowest is we can give you if you need.
Okay, right now we're just holding 17.7, but we're getting pretty good vibration here. And, yeah, just keep us close to what we can go down to if we need to.
Alright. I'll make it 230 degrees, that's another 5, right? If you need not acknowledge any transmission, 150 now on the ground speed, 160.
Yeah, we checked out, and 230 to heading another right 5.
Okay, that is a little little taste of the YouTube video, and part two it gets even more intense. That's just a little taste. He's or they're up at 17,000, 18,000 feet, and they encounter some pretty severe icing. Their props start icing up. Their wings are icing up. Getting a pretty bad vibration from the propeller icing, and they are, you know, turning around and trying to get to, back to Kelowna. I think this is all in the province of British Columbia, where they're in mountainous terrain. They're talking to Vancouver Center, and so I think that the air traffic controllers can kind of sense that this is a pretty serious situation. And we can see that as time goes on and they're trying to return to this other field, that their ground speed is dropping off, and the ice is continuing to accumulate on the airframe and propellers of this airplane. And although they're trying to stay at a certain altitude, they continue to lose altitude. And at this point, he said that they're descending at 500 feet per minute. And this is not a controlled descent. This is just because the airplane cannot maintain altitude. And now you can hear his concern, just as our Bonanza pilot had a concern about the altitude and the terrain and wanting to go lower. Well, this guy, I don't know if he wants to go lower or they want to go lower, but the airplane is just not maintaining altitude. So now they're concerned about all the high terrain that they're over. So they're in the clouds, in icing. It's at night. They can't see a thing. And they feel a pretty bad vibration on the airplane. And as I said, I'll have a link to the second part. You have to listen to it because it'll get your heart rate going very high before you finish listening to it. So anyway, icing, it's a serious thing. Let's be careful out there. Let's think about what our capabilities are personally, what our airplane capabilities are, looking at the weather, keeping in mind the proper altitudes to fly, what the freezing level is, what altitudes you have to climb to or descend to get above freezing level. And let's just be careful out there and learn a lesson from these two incidents. Okay, let me look back through here on my Evernote, see if there was anything else I wanted to talk about here. Yeah, of course, there's always more to talk about. But that's going to do it for today's show. Again, a little bit longer than I wanted it to go. But I feel like I'm finally getting pretty caught up on feedback and answering feedback. Continue to send it in. As I mentioned before, this is about our conversation back and forth regarding issues regarding travel and flying and such. So if you have any questions, send them in. If I can't answer them, I'll either try to find somebody that can, or maybe somebody listening can put in their two cents. So until next time, thanks for listening. Keep subscribed. Oh, by the way, if you want, you can, I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, Stitcher Radio, Stitcher.com. You can download an app for your smartphone, and you can listen to this podcast via that if you want. A lot of other great podcasts and radio programs available on the Stitcher Radio platform. And let's see, I'm trying to find the... listen to me on your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, and Web OS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. And as they say, Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. So check it out and continue to stay subscribed, send feedback, and that's it. I guess I should shut up now. And I'll see you next time on the Airline Pilot Guy. Take care and God bless. Oh, before I go, just thought I'd mention, several episodes ago, somebody sent in some feedback talking about the ABC series that was in production that was going to air this fall, and it has actually been put out there. I think they have four episodes now. The series called Pan Am, and it's about the dawn of the jet age in the 60s, and it's kind of a character-based, drama series with aviation, airline flying as a background, traveling all around the world and some of the stories involved. So we've started a podcast with Father Roderick and I, and we're going to have different guests now and then talking about the show. And so if you're interested in watching the show and hearing what we have to say, our analysis, check it out. It's called The Secrets of Pan Am, and you can find that on iTunes. Just do a search for Secrets of Pan Am podcast, and check it out on sqpn.com. Give it a listen. See what you think. Thanks.